Hello and welcome to this episode of Just Thinking. I'm Kevin Doherty, your host for the Just Thinking podcast and the Chief Strategy Officer for 806 Technologies. And today I couldn't be more excited because we have a returning guest to our podcast. He was the guest on our inaugural Just Thinking podcast. Good friend, amazing educator, and a future-focused thinker, Dr. Ray McNulty.
It's great to be here. Oh, it's great. It's great, Kevin. And I like to say, you're recycling me and the ideas, and we're into the green world. See that? We're recycling things. It's good.
I love it. So we can even recycle guests on a podcast. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation, Ray, because I know you've been refining your work on this future-focused thinking. And you shared with me a quote, and I wanted to share it with everyone here first. But the quote was, "We must make the future more powerful than the past in shaping the needs of all our learners."
Yep. Talk about that a little bit. You know, the reason, there's a lot of reasons for it. One is that the children we're educating, their world is still out there that they're going to live in. So the future is more important to them. And, you know, it's nice to talk about, I always would love to talk about the days when I went to school and we had the Encyclopedia Britannica and we looked things up. But these children, right, they're going to be living in a world that, you know, if you know this group of children right now that are in our schools, they refer to them as the Alpha Generation. They have all been born after 2010. That group of children have had more information available to them than any other generation ever. I mean, it's just in front of them. It's right at their fingertips. And so think of it now, what it's going to look like in 10 more years. And the future, you know, look, I'm not afraid of the past. And I think we've done great things in education. But we have to spend more time focused on foresight, on where are these children going to be living? What are they going to be experiencing? And we have to get them ready for that. We don't need to get them ready, you know, for the kind of lives we lived in. And it's just that we're driven by the comfort of the past.
Yes.
And I see all too often we look back and we say, how can we improve our reading scores a little more, a little better? Things like that. And it's really what we have to start to ask is, are there things out there that we should be doing now that we're not doing? Are there things that these children are going to be experiencing that we will never experience?
Right.
That we have to get them ready for this pace. The pace of change is incredibly fast. And so our eyes have to be on the future. We just look back too much. We can't drive a school in a learning system by looking in the rearview mirror. We've got to look at the road ahead.
Yeah. Well stated. You know, it's funny. I just posted on LinkedIn just a few moments ago this infographic that was talking about the impact AI is going to have on careers going forward. It was put together by Microsoft in collaboration with LinkedIn, interestingly. Mm-hmm. And they created this really wonderful infographic that we need to be aware of this. As educators, we need to know what this information is saying, what this research is telling us about the impact AI is going to have on the careers of the future. So
absolutely. Just think of it wasn't maybe 2 years ago we were gearing everything up for teaching every child coding. And all of a sudden, if you want to suggest to AI that you need a program that will do these things, it will write the code. You could run it. It might not operate the right way. You could say, you got to fix this. It will go in and fix it. And all of a sudden that's gone.
Right. Yeah. That's crazy. So
just think of it as the old whiteout we used to have. because then it was the IBM Selectric had a, you know, they had a way to have that disappear. Now we just eliminate the whole sentence.
Well, you went a little further because you said that creating the schools we need is all about making the future more powerful than the past. And we deal with three forces in doing so. The weight of the past, as you were just alluding to.
Yes.
The push of the present.
Yes.
And the pull of the future. And that if all three have the same weight, we're paralyzed. We're stuck. We're not going anywhere.
I mean, if you could think of like a stuffed animal and there's three dogs pulling at it at the same time, and they're all about the same size and weight, right? And what you're going to end up doing is you're just going to stand there and not much is going to happen. The system is going to get a little torn up. But, you know, we really need to put our accent on the future. And it needs to have more weight than the past and the present. Not that you do away with them. And a lot of people think that that's what we're saying. It's not. You know, put a 5 pounds over there and 5 pounds there. Maybe put more over here. But don't, there are things that, let's face it, one of the things we know right now, and we've got to do a better job in our schools, is literacy is critical. It's critical for these students because they are going to have to discover the learning of the future. They're going to have to understand and read and take new information in. And we have to do a much better job of it. So if there's anything we have to do a better job in, is literacy, you know. And then and the other thing is numeracy and getting them to understand numbers very, very well. But we're going through something right now. If you want to call, if I think about the pull of the past, it's something called content. Mm. And what we're seeing in the field is, and I really believe in Bill Daggett, who I work with, and yes. Our team, that we really believe we're going through a third major shift in education. So if we go back to, and that's since 1983. 1983 was a nation at risk.
Right.
And the workforce said to the schools, you know, if a foreign nation had done to us what our public schools have, we would have declared war on them. And they were talking about that the workforce was not getting the kind of worker they needed.
Right.
And so that was 1983. Then so we all ran around and said we got to get kids, you know, work ready, and they need to have the basic skills that they need. So then in 2002 was No Child Left Behind, right? And what this said is we have to have standards everywhere and state assessment. And the focus was on college ready.
Right.
Okay. And now what we're getting, and we're seeing this happen, is we're seeing the businesses and McKinsey and a bunch of other organizations put out the skills that children need, or the skills our workers need to be successful in the world today. And it's all about skills. It's not about content. And there's this thing that we rub up against, and I think you've heard schools say this often. We have to get all of our students college and career ready.
Right.
Well, guess what? They're very different. Mm. Career, college ready is about content.
Right.
You want to go to University of Texas? Well, make sure you have 4 English, 3 math, 3 science, this, that. Bundle it all up and you have a test score.
Right.
That will get you to college.
Right.
You want to go to work? They need skills. Right. You need to be collaborative. You need to be, you know, you need to be resilient. You need to have social skills. You need all these things. And they're saying, and the workforce is saying, look, I don't need somebody that has, you know, 10 years of English. We need people that can communicate. We need people that can speak. We need people that pay attention, that listen. We need, you know, and it's a very different, and you know, and then this goes back to a conversation you and I were just having, which is we were talking about assessment.
Right.
What do we assess? What do we assess at our state levels? Content.
Right.
And not collaborative work, because that's cheating.
Yes.
And not networking with other people. And now, you know, anybody in the workforce today knows they don't work alone.
Right.
They work together on a team. You're going to have people that have different opinions. You need to be able to manage those different opinions, get your work done. So when you take that whole bucket, right, and you talk about the, you know, the push of the present, the pull of the future, and the weight of the past, the weight of the past right now is like a giant thing holding us back.
Right.
Because we're all content organized. It's about subject.
Right.
Well, I'm not saying we should do away with content. Content, however, should be the enabler for us to teach a skill. Okay, so let's take and put some content together. Let's take a little, you know, like a big, my mom, Italian mom, when she made her gravy, which was not called sauce in my house, was called gravy. You put a little tomato and basil and you blew these different things in. Well, we have to take English and math and some, you know, maybe some economic principles and maybe some other things and mix them together to create a challenge for our kids that will then, through that content, they'll collaborate, cooperate with each other. They'll become resilient. They'll become, you know, they'll be able to predict something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're going to be able to organize their thinking.
Yes.
They're going to be able to build a plan that can be, you know, executed. That's what they need. And that's a big difference between where we were.
Right. So as you move there, though, Ray, I'm hearing some of the critical thinking skills as well.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we at SPN, one of the things we've done is we're starting to create like a portrait of what does it look like? Because it can get too complicated. We're trying to make it a little simpler. So, you know, we're talking about things like self-leadership skills, right? And we're talking about things like interpersonal skills. Mm-hmm. And the cognitive skills are necessary.
Sure. Right?
Higher level of thinking, critical, you know, total critical thinking, adaptability.
Right.
Flexibility, you know, not just problem solving, but problem predicting. Looking ahead and saying, oh, I see something. If we do this, this is what's going to happen. This might happen. That's a very different way of thinking through all this work. But the bottom line is we need our students to have self-control. They need to be risk takers.
Yes.
So when you put that and you put a group of students together on a big project where they struggle and they go down a road where they fail and then what did they learn from their failure? How do they put themselves back together? That's, you know, the business people are saying, those are the things we need. We can teach them the content of our business, but they need to come with the right tools in their bag. And so this is a challenge for us in education because this is not change. This is transformational.
You mentioned, Ray, the whole idea of being problem finders as well as problem solvers.
Yes.
We tend to focus historically on problem solving as opposed to the problem finding. And that made me think of conversations that I've had with folks about when you're talking to our students of today. Historically, you'd ask the question, so what do you want to do when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? Instead, changing that and saying, what's a problem you want to solve? And how do you want to go about solving it? And then building the learning, the science, the math, the economics, all the things that you just talked about around the solving of that problem. And better yet, doing it collaboratively with others who share your interest in solving that particular problem. So now school is a very compelling place to be because everything that I'm doing is geared towards that.
Absolutely. And it's the content, the content enables you to teach those skills and have children experience it. Right now, content is the solution. So we have a lot of students that are content specialists.
Yes.
And they can be, they're very good at that. And that's fine. I don't want to discount that, but it's not going to be enough to be in a world that's driven by AI.
Right.
You know, generative AI is going to give you a lot of those pieces. And when you start to, you know, it's that merger of human intelligence with AI intelligence. The strength of the human brain is in taking those things and putting them together. you know, I know you fly a lot. I fly a lot.
Yes.
The planes can take off and land on their own. We do not need the pilots. All right. But to have a pilot, I always think of MacGyver or somebody who has that special skill that says we're in trouble or we have a problem. Here are some thoughts around this that are non-linear, not very, you know, nothing that can be just a push the button thing. It's like, how do we make this work? How do we use duct tape to solve a problem, right? So these are the things, this is the value of the human brain. Yes. And so if we're only laying our future with these young children in our schools, if we lay our future on teaching them the War of 1812, and I'm not, again, there is a reason for content,
sure,
right? Because we can learn from our historical past.
Right.
But it's only if we use it in a way to develop a necessary skill for the future.
I love that. And, you know, and so I want to take us back to those three pieces that you talked about.
Yeah.
So, and you talk about them as the building blocks of foresight.
Foresight, exactly.
So talk a little bit more. Let's take each of those building blocks and talk about each one individually. So you've already been talking about it, but I want to just kind of take it a little bit deeper. Yep. So the weight of the past. What are some of the things from your perspective and your experiences that are driving that? I know you talked a little bit about maybe nostalgia or whatever. There are things that...
Yeah, but it's also... Right, so let's look at the one of the... Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Like hearing that dog bark.
Now the dog barked when you're talking about dogs earlier, right on cue. That was great.
Yeah, that's right. So when you think about some of the weight of the past, how we prepare teachers, okay, that will eliminate that. That's a killer for us, because there, you know, it's all designed around content, and it's a part. It's not. You know, and we structure it in that one teacher, one classroom model. So earlier, you and I were having an earlier conversation about our labor force.
Right.
You know, I've seen high school graduates that could go into a school and could be very engaging if there was a position that a high school graduate could take to get kids to think. Somebody right. that might have graduated my school but had five jobs in the last 10 years. And so, you know, they're there to be helpful. Elevating our teachers in a status where we might have a master teacher that might lead a team of two or three associate degree people, and then another team where we have a team of people in our system. It's not just a teacher in a class. I mean, that goes back to Little House on the Prairie, okay? Right. No workforce is still designed around that. Look at what goes on in our hospitals and in legal areas, right? There used to be a nurse and a doctor. Now it's a doctor, a nurse, a doctor, you know, a physician's assistant, a nurse practitioner. And there's layer and layer. And when I was at Penn Foster as the chief learning officer there, we did a lot of work on training vet technicians, because a vet can only see so many dogs a day. But if you put a vet tech in that office, he could that vet, she could see, or he could see maybe twice as many patients in a day, right? But it's because you take what you need to do for from a doctor's perspective and say, okay, I'm going to see the dog. I'm going to say, this dog now needs a shot and needs this done. I'm leaving. Nobody else comes in, they do the shot.
Right.
The same in education. Teachers could manage a team. And but that's one thing that's a weight of the past, you know. So if you think about that, that's a significant weight. And then we also have, you know, grades that move along in a fixed time process. And that is just a corral of, you know, everybody wait here.
Right.
And I tell a story about if educators designed a marathon, what would happen is everyone would line up at the line. And then they would say, go. And the elite runners would get to the finish line in just around the 2 hour mark. But they would say, stop, don't cross the line. And we're going to keep. And so people will start coming. They'll spread out all over the 23 mile, you know. And then at some point we'll say, well, 4 hours is enough for everybody. So at the hour rings at four, they all step across the line. Everybody else stop where you are. You can't finish. Right. That's not how it should be. Right. And we're fixated on time. And so the delivery model is quite, you know, if you talk about the weight of the past, this is a significant one. Right.
That's huge.
Then you move Then you move, you know, if you move to say, I'm going to say the push, right?
Yes.
The push of the present.
Yes.
Well, what we know about what happened in our world is like when something is hot, all of a sudden, it becomes a big push. All right. So unfortunately, in education, this could happen where there could be an accident in the community, a drug overdose, and all of a sudden, everything becomes, everyone's got to be able to do this. You know, and so there's a push. There might be a business lays off a lot of people in the town. It has an effect on the educational system. So there's always these little, and the push usually is, you know, it could be local or it could be state. The state could be experiencing something. So there's these different pressures on our systems. Well, we're going to readjust the state assessment. That's a local thing. Everyone, well, now what do we got to do, right? So we've got to move to that. So you can see these different pressures. And we, you know, one of the things I do for districts a lot now is I get in and do some planning with them, strategic planning. We try to get a strategic plan down to like one page, something that can be seen in every classroom. It's visible. But, you know, you've got to have at the core, one of the things when you talk about, when I raise this issue of foresight, we need to have a really clear vision of where we're going and what we want to accomplish.
Yes.
But the future punishes certainty. You can't have an exact pathway to get to it. The pathway is a squiggly, crazy line. However, if you have a very, very clear vision and you have, you know, the really clear outcomes you want to establish, you keep using your compass and adjusting. Don't forget where we're going. We're going there. All right. And you'll wander there, but you'll get there. And so the point is, we're living in this world, and you know, I refer to it as the VUCA world, as do many others, and it is volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, it's ambiguous. However, if you're clear about where you want to go, you're not certain about how you're going to get there, but you have some core values and some a real clarity about what you want to accomplish.
Yes.
You arrive.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about my experiences with the assistant superintendents of technology or whatever their title is in various districts. And I was a young principal, and I was at an administrative meeting, and the chief technology officer or whatever his title was trying to present this vision. But he had to also, in doing so, acknowledge the uncertainty of the future that you just described. And that was not sitting well with most of the people in the group.
No, we don't.
They wanted him to be very clear about what the future was going to hold. And I remember I was probably in my early 30s, and I went up to him afterwards and I said, I just applaud you for what you did, because you laid out a very clear vision. You laid out your goals and strategies to achieve this vision, while at the same time acknowledging that this future is somewhat uncertain. And that you couldn't give answers to that. As much as people pressed you to give answers, you wouldn't, because you couldn't. And yet that didn't diminish the power of the vision that you were laying out. And I remember applauding him, and he said, thank you for acknowledging that, Kevin, because not everybody sees that.
You just hit the nail right on the head, because everybody wants certainty, mm-hmm. right? And what we know is, you know, the future is about a lot of uncertainty, you know. I mean, because look at what happened almost overnight, a little over a year ago, when everyone started talking about generative AI. And
right.
All of a sudden, like, oh my God, and in lightning speed, the world went crazy. I mean, there were people probably designing things that now there's really no need for. So, you know, this is what the future is going to bring for us, because our ability to use technology to solve a lot of problems in, you know, look at the medical profession. The medical profession is really starting to really zero in on personalizing drugs. And there's a lot of things that are happening. Now, it's not going to be a direct road, a clear pathway. I happen to own, I think, you know, I have a 2018 Tesla and a 2020 Tesla. Both of them have full self-drive model. but they're not full self-drive. They're not autonomous drivers. But let me tell you what's gone on since I've owned them. The same software gets upgraded. So when I first had it, it at least stayed in the lane and it turned when you were on its own. Now it reads road signs. It rides the back roads. On Cape Cod, yes, you can let the car drive. It'll see stop signs. It'll go around a rotary. If you plot it, it will bring you to your house.
Wow.
Now you need to pay attention and you need to have your hands in the wheel, because guess what? There's things that go on all the time, but it has improved at least tenfold.
Right.
Every time a Tesla's out there on the road, it's sending information back and they're re-engineering this software. So it, you know, eventually we'll get close to autonomous. Airplanes have a pilot, as I said earlier, they're sitting there.
Right? Yes.
And the thing about the future that people need to understand is, and I use this example when I speak about foresight, I speak a lot about foresight because I don't think we train our people to understand the value of it. But everybody looks at the weather forecast.
Right.
All the time.
Yes.
You're looking, what's today? Wednesday. We're looking at the weekend, aren't we? We're looking, saying, and they're predicting the future. They're predicting.
Yes. Right?
Does it always turn out that way?
No.
But that's because there's, you know, the wind will turn a certain direction. Something will happen.
Variable.
We don't know. But they're getting better at it, okay?
Yes.
And so what we're saying is, you know, you use the future to plan what you want to do. We should be using the future to plan what our children accomplish and where we want to take them. It's just like the weather forecast. And the further out you look, the more uncertainty to it. But let me just say to you, and as a thought about someone who plays in the future a lot, there's a quote, and I forget who made it, but the future is always present. It's just not evenly distributed. Somewhere somebody is playing with the future that is going to make a significant change. And I'm sure the company that you work for, people were playing with things like, this is a challenge in the district. We can build something to have it happen. And they did it. And then they fixed it 3 or 4 times more. And they keep tweaking it. And they're making it better.
Absolutely.
That is what it's all about.
That is so powerful, Ray. And, you know, to that end, you also talk about the portrait of a future-focused system.
Yep.
So as we kind of wrap up this episode, and I already know we're going to be meeting again soon, but as we wrap up this one today, what does that mean to you? What is the portrait of a future?
Well, what we're saying is, people, you know, there's a lot of people, and I think we all use the word, oh, well, I'm a future focused school. Well, yeah, well, what is it? Right. So we're really been taking a look at it, and we're saying that a future focused school has to have a proactive culture, not just a culture, a proactive culture. Like, you know, what happens when a teacher has an idea in a building to do something new and different? They say, you know, I think I could do this. I saw something happen and I might be able to do this. Where do you take that? Right. Well, in most schools, you don't take it anywhere. You just keep the thought in your head. But do we have a shark tank? Do we have an entrepreneurial culture that helps teachers, or it could be a parent come in with an idea? Let's try this. Do we have a mechanism to do some of those kind of things? Is it a culture that I hear a lot of educators talk about, they encourage innovation. Well, how do you do that?
Right.
You know, so what about those? What kind of structure helps to create a proactive culture in a school system? And the same thing goes for proactive instruction. I think the word proactive is important, because the instructional model should constantly be changing, because guess what? Everything's changing.
Right.
And look at what AI has done to writing. I use Grammarly. I use a lot of different things. I throw a couple of thoughts into AI and ask it to help me write a letter. This is very different. But those children that are sitting in our schools right now, this is going to be second nature to all of them. And that's going to be so. And we need to be proactive. And then the other thing is, as I said earlier, I think we need to really take a look at what we're doing with respect to how are we educating our children? And let's identify a unique group of cognitive skills. Let's identify the interpersonal skills they need to be successful. And then let's talk about self-leadership skills, because we do so many things for our kids. We don't let them make their own plans.
Yes. Right?
Somebody says, these kids can't build a plan. Well, because they've never had to.
Right.
So, you know, it's these are things that are what we're doing at SPN, and we're trying to encourage districts is to come up with a portrait of what is a future focused system. What are the elements? What are the internal structures? Right now, we don't have as much as people talk about wanting to be innovative and creative. That's not the culture you see in a school district. You see rules, regulations, and policies that keep things in place.
Yes.
And we have a bell schedule that rings. And then I walk into businesses and they have a way to get a new idea and market it as quickly as they possibly can. Test it, try it, take it to scale if it's good. If it's not good, how can we make it better? Those are the kind of things I'm talking about, Kevin. It's fun to talk about. I've been in this career for a long time. I've never been as excited as I am now, because I think we have a great opportunity to create the schools our children need for their future.
I usually ask at the end, is there anything else about what you're just thinking that I didn't give you an opportunity to address? But I'm not going to ask that question this time, because you ended on such a powerful note that I think I want people to let that stir around in their brains. I want them to let that resonate. You mentioned the work that I do with strategic planning, even around compliance. You know, millions, billions of dollars, a lot of money is being poured into better serving historically underserved kids. But are we considering all the things that we just discussed and how we're spending that money so that we're truly moving the needle in a future focused way? So the conversation that we had today are the types of conversations that can and should be going on in every school, in every district across the nation, throughout the world. And so I love our conversations. We need to have another conversation after this, but I want to get this out to folks to think about, to talk about, and maybe even respond to you and me about the conversation that we had. Maybe they have a question about something. Maybe they want to challenge something that was shared. That's part of the critical thinking. I welcome that. I think it'd be great.
I feel that's the best thing they can do is raise more questions.
Yeah.
The more questions we raise, the better we're all going to be in dealing with this. You know, I think that when I look at struggling students in our schools and we hold them in the old model until they get better, they need to be placed in a new model because the old one hasn't worked. And, you know, it's just like, let's open their minds and their thinking to what they're going to experience in their lives. And I think the road ahead, I appreciate your thoughts. I love your concept of just thinking, because I think we need to do a lot more just thinking. Yeah.
Thank you, Ray. Appreciate you.
Thanks very much, Kevin. It's been a pleasure.